Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Athletic Hockey Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to an extremely special edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. This is one you're going to want to set aside, listen to like daily. For the next year, I would say, at the very least, this one's going to be timeless. It's timeless because the NHL 99 Project, which is the top players of all time, and we'll get into the details, as voted on by a prestigious panel of athletic hockey writers, is coming to a conclusion. As we record right now, Mario Lemieux came in at number 2, Wayne Gretzky, of course, number 1. It's the NHL 99 Project, so no spoiler there.
You don't know that.
Number 1 will be released tomorrow of the NHL 99 Project. Here at the Athletic.
Gretzky was actually 102. Spoiler, everybody. He missed out.
If you add your way, Sean. So, as you would expect with something like this, people didn't agree with everything that was presented to them, from story choice to where people were slotted. This became a daily debate on the Athletic website. That's the whole point, right? And so we wanted to get a roundtable of panelists on here to defend their outrageous votes. I mean, just maybe even irresponsible in some cases. And it's a great, like, we handpicked them because these are our favorites. All due respect to the rest of the panelists. We got Shayna and Dom and Sean and Eric Tuhacek, who really, he ran point on this project. And so we're going to start with Eric because he's done this before. Eric, he's influential in the Hall of Fame voting. He did this in 1997 with the Hockey News when they had a top, it ended up being, I think, top 100 players of all time. He voted on the NHL's. If you remember, I think it was the All-Star Game in LA where they did their around their 100-year anniversary. Eric was part of that panel. And of course, in classic NHL fashion, we didn't want to offend any of the players. So they came out, I think, by height. I don't remember exactly how they did it. And now this. So Eric, let's start with this. Did it get any easier on this one? We're talking about players of different eras, and you can kind of give some of the parameters that we set up to make this one a little bit different. But how did this NHL 99 differentiate itself for you?
Well, to me, it was the most challenging, the ones that I voted on, Craig, because there were two sides of the divide that we had to debate. So, for example, in 1997, the Hockey News publication. There were a lot of players that were in mid-career. Controversially, Eric Lindros is one of the big ones there because he was at the height of his NHL powers when this vote came out. And then soon after, he was voted 50-something on the list. You know, his career went into decline because of the concussions. But we didn't have to worry about the starting point. You know, everybody started at the same point. The only controversy really was, you know, how far along does a player have to be in his career to qualify as one of the greatest players of all time. But what we decided, or the editors decided at the Athletic, was that they wanted to do a different spin on it. And so it was the post-expansion NHL. So that eliminated all of the, you know, players in the years before 1967. And it also eliminated all of the WHA years. So that made it really complicated for players like Dave Keon, for Frank Mahovlich, even Gordie Howe. I grew up in Toronto as a big Leaf fan. My favorite player was Dave Keon, and Frank Mahovlich had an important influence in my life. But, you know, Dave Keon played 24 years. It was very, very easy for me to put him on the greatest the hockey news list, the NHL list. But here, he only 11 of the 24 years that Dave Keon played qualified under the parameters that we set. And three of those years were right at the end of his career when he was playing for the Hartford Whalers after having spent time in the WHA. So if you isolated those 11 years, they were good. They were very good. They were, but not top 100 good. Mm. And so players like Dave Keon, players like Frank Mahovlich, there were an awful lot of players who spilled over into expansion, but probably had their best years just prior to expansion. And that, in addition to the complication of trying to figure out where an all-time great like Connor McDavid fit in at this early stage of his career, where someone like Leon Draisaitl, who is, you know, right there as the 1B star of the Edmonton Oilers, where does he fit in? So I would have to tell you, I spent more time on this list than the others. And, you know, and I kept changing and trying different parameters. And even at the end of it, you're never completely satisfied with the list. But at some point, you know, you lock it in, you send it in, and you hope for the best.
All right, here's how we're going to do this. In this first segment, we're going to take a lap around the room, talk some generalities. Player, you know, the voting was last year, so things have changed. Connor McDavid's overall ranking was a bit of a talker. Leon Draisaitl not being on the list, I think, was something people objected to. We're going to get into that. Second segment, we're going to talk about outliers on each of the panelists' lists. Each one of them had at least one person. They ranked completely different than the rest, and there's some interesting names and discussions to be had. And then third segment, we take your questions. We offered up our email address. We don't like to share it with too many people, but heading into this, we offered it up, and a few of you reached out and had some questions and comments, even compliments for Sean, even one of them, surprisingly. So... Let's start with Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid, the voting, when was this? You all voted, let's say, what month?
It was June. It was February of last year.
February of last year.
Is when the process started, yeah.
Okay. So let me start with this. Instead of specifically talking about Connor, who finished at number 16, Shayna, I'm going to start with you here and say, what would you have changed if you were voting today, if anything?
Probably would have had Connor McDavid higher because he has shown that his otherworldly play has somehow another level to it because he just wants to score goals now and can take over a game more so than before. Cale Makar probably would have been higher as well. And like that was tough because we only had so many games to go with and we're docking players whose careers are done by like longevity. We don't have that with him, but you know, we knew he would rise. Just the extent I think was more than we expected. And, yeah, players like Leon Draisaitl, like he had a standout moment in the playoffs playing on one leg, and we can't let one playoff series influence it, but it was his moment to like break out as more than just, he's amazing when he's with Connor McDavid, and that's when he's supposedly heart caliber, and he's horrible defensively. It's like, wait, he's a superstar in his own right. So those are like the changes, I think, that we've noticed since we voted.
Yeah, those are all good ones. Dan, what about you? When you look back, what would you have done differently or changed with time?
Well, with the Makar thing, I would agree. It's just we had a games played cutoff and Makar didn't fit on it. And if we did this in the summer, I would have made a much bigger stink about it. I remember at the draft, I was talking with Sean saying, should Makar be on here? Will we look silly without him? And he's only played, I think it was less than 200 games, but what he's already done has been incredible. And we talk a lot about how we valued peak years during this process. And Makar's peak is already with some of the all-time greats. I just checked. I had Leon Draisaitl the highest. I would have put him higher after that playoff run because he should have been on this list, I think. If you have Matthews, if you have McKinnon, I think Draisaitl is right there. And I did put a bit more reverence to the newer players and what they're doing because I think this might be one of the best eras the NHL has ever seen in terms of skill. And I think there should have been a better representation of that with how their peak is already looking, and Dreisaitl is one of those guys.
Mm. Sean, how about you? You have a year to kind of stew over your list and what's happened since. Any changes?
Generally, no. I don't think those are the terms that we can think about this in, honestly. Right. Like, there's got to be a cutoff at some point. Like, we can't predict what's going to happen. We couldn't predict that Cale Makar was going to go out and do what he did in the playoffs. We couldn't predict that Dreisaitl was going to have in terms of an individual takeaway, you know, from last season's playoff. It was him on one leg, right? But we don't know that that's going to happen. We can't predict the future. That said, I feel like I screwed up on Dreisaitl just in general, right? Like, like he should have been there. He should have been on my list regardless of what happened in the playoffs. But like, but as far as, you know, letting games played over the last year push us in one direction or the other, I don't think we can really exist in that sphere, because you have to end it at some point. And the way to guard against that for me when I was thinking about this is, of course, you know that, like, by the unless something crazy happens, by the time it's all said and done, Connor McDavid's going to be four, and he's going to be top four, and he might not be fourth, right? So you need to account for that, and you need to accept the fact that in 15 years, if people care enough to look at this list, stuff's going to look bad. That's the way it goes. That's an occupational hazard of doing this kind of stuff. But you have to keep some kind of internal logic, I think, with the way you approach it, to set it up in a way that you can defend. These lists are only as good as what we can defend, right? So that was the approach that I took. I'm not worried about Connor having a great playoff last year and blah, blah, because that's the way it goes. And the way I guarded against that was I really did try, because we had numbers courtesy of Dom and Shannon, we had peak scores, we had like 1 year, 3 year, 5 year peaks. I tried to incorporate that a lot because I thought that at least if I put real shrift in that, And you could say Connor McDavid's 5 year peak is here in relation to everybody else, I thought that was the fail-safe generally against giving short shrift to the current players. But with all that being said, Dreisaitl's the one where I feel like I just dropped the ball out of the gate. Like, he should have been on there for me.
Eric, what did you? Sean talked about kind of peak years, and when you're doing these lists, what do you value most when you start ranking players over time and eras? Is there an element that you value most?
No, because I think there's so many factors that go into it. You know, era-adjusted stats are a good example. So I started covering hockey full-time in 80-81, and I was based in Calgary, and the team that played eight games a year against Calgary was the Edmonton Oilers. And I think 1985 was the highest scoring year in NHL history, you know, certainly for most of the arc of my career. So you do have to adjust for the fact that they were scoring 400 plus goals at a time when, you know, 10, 15 years later, the dead puck era came in and it just changed the parameters for everyone. Like, you know, I think about the great superstars to come through Calgary, and where does Jerome McGinley apply, you know, to the, you know, the new indicts and the Hawk and Loops and the Joey Mullins and the Doug Gilmers that came a generation before him, because he played in an era when it was just so much harder to score goals. When he's winning scoring titles with, you know, 92 points when, you know, others were scoring 130. So that was a factor too. But I have to say that everybody comes into these projects with a bias, and I'm not sure what the opposite of a recency bias is, but that was my bias,
opposite of a recency bias?
Is there a word for that? I was trying to figure out, and I could not.
A distance bias?
Distancy bias. That's a word.
Distancy is the word you're looking for.
Maybe like nostalgia bias. Like, I think that might
longevity
be
longevity or whatever.
Longevity bias.
But again, I was, you know, like, I was conscious of the fact that you know, I'm old enough to be everybody's dad, or even older than that. I started watching hockey in 1964, and I was a hardcore fan right up through my teen years, and I've been a professional paid sports writer since 1978. Mm-hmm. So I did watch a lot of these guys play for a long time. And I felt that I probably gave a little bit, maybe I gave too much weight to the performances of the Michelle Goulets and the Yvonne Cornways and the Roby Vachons and the Doug Wilsons. But I saw them play. I saw their impact. I saw their impact in the dressing room. Sometimes mm-hmm. those things are hard to measure. Stats matter. Of course they matter. Championships matter. Playoff performances matter. All those things matter. But sometimes you just form an impression of a player from dealing with them and watching them against their peers at that time. And I was trying to bring that perspective because I knew we would get, a great perspective from everybody that voted. I mean, you're not on this panel because you don't know hockey. You know a lot about hockey. Everybody who was on this panel deserves to be on the panel. But I felt that was the one thing that I could maybe bring that others who haven't been around as long might not be able to.
I think I was surprised. I figure people go into this, readers, knowing there's going to be debate or whatever, and people were really I don't know. I mean, they would get worked up in the comments about where people were placed and who was off the list. And I love that, Daniel Nugent-Bowman's bringing the list into the Oilers' dressing room and asking about Drysdale. That what makes this fun. And so I did want to see if there was
reaction. Did that. I didn't realize he did that.
Oh, great. Yeah. There was there was a lot of offshoots to this package. Provided plenty of content. I'll go with you, Dom. Was there a reaction from the readers that surprised you in terms of anything from the story angle to the players ranking that you were like, oh, wow, I didn't think people would react that way?
I try to stay away from the comments lately. mine are particularly bad. I let Sean text me the bad ones.
You're that guy, Sean? Hey, did you see this?
Did you see this one, buddy?
I think I've pivoted in the last few months. Yeah,
in his
away from
era.
Comments.
Yeah, it's been tough, but I think the Matthews one was interesting. I guess I expected it to be the way it was because he's a Leaf, and that's just the way it is. And with the context of Leon Draisaitl not being there, I totally understand. But when you read the intro and see what the games played cutoff is, you know why that games played cutoff is. It's to make sure Matthews is on there because he, when all is said and done, might be the best American-born player of all time.
I think he's
on that trajectory, right? So he's got to be on there. And I think looking back, maybe that games played cutoff should have been lower to include Makar. But I mean, it is what it is. And Matthews ended up being the guy with the least experience, and he had to show up somewhere. But I mean, I don't disagree with where he is. I had him lower than he was on the list, but what he's done to date is up there. His peak is up there with some of the best players of all time already. It's just a matter of getting that longevity.
We should have put the games cut off at zero so we could get Bedard on there.
Yeah.
Really project. Yeah. Austin Matthews came in at number 64 on the list. Connor McDavid, number 16. Shayna, let's say hypothetically we were to bound all of these fine stories that you all wrote and put it into a book, and it was coming out in a couple of years. So we have to re-rank them to show for time past. Austin Matthews is at 64 now. Connor McDavid is at number 16. 2 years from now, where do you see that ending up?
Okay, so I see Connor McDavid absolutely is top 10, because I think you could honestly make the argument for him being top 10 now. I'm going to say he is probably in 2 years... God, he probably is scoring a ton and as miserable as ever in Edmonton. I don't think he esks out of there yet, so he still doesn't have a championship to his name, and that's going to impact his ranking right there.
Okay, good.
Everyone's favorite team, the Edmonton Oilers. Mm-hmm. Draisaitl's begging to get out of there, so now McDavid's really alone, and that's going to impact him. But I'm going to say he's number 7 there, because everyone's going to complain that he doesn't have a championship to his name. He doesn't have a Conn Smythe that he probably should, and there's nothing he can do to will his team unless he starts playing goal. When he does that, top 5. But 2 years from now, I'm going to say he's 7.
Stu Skinner slander there, by the way.
I know, wow.
We love Stu Skinner, okay? It's just Jack Campbell's cap hit just sitting there. He's nice, though. He's a nice locker room presence, so he can't be too mean to him. We can be mean to Tim Holland, though.
Because any Jack Campbell slander on this podcast, you know the American edition will not allow it. Continue. Austin Matthews goes from 64 to... I didn't mind Austin Matthews at 64. I mean, maybe it's a bias, but I agree. Like, best, he'll end up being the best American player of all time. I believe that.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, for him, championships going to be a problem. Playoff success going to come into the equation. And like, for me, that's secondary, honestly. Like, trophy points, playoff success is secondary. It's a consideration, just as longevity is, but it's not the primary thing. I think, you know, 1 year peak, 3 year peak, 5 year peak, whole career, what you're doing, like, that's first and foremost. So with that in mind, I think he's going to be like a top 25 player in 2 years. The rate he's scoring goals, the variety in his game, the shot creation, how much he can do by himself, how much he can set up his teammates too. Like, and there's the defensive acumen too. If he can start killing penalties even more, I think that's just going to keep pumping him up higher, because then he'll legitimately be in the Selke conversation, because I think he could be right now, but the penalty killing is going to hold him back. So I'm going to say I could see in 2 years him being in that like 20 to 25 range. And I think a couple years later can, you know, slide even higher.
You're also going to have the intangible benefit of in 2 years, whenever Austin Matthews brings a Stanley Cup to the Arizona Coyotes. That's going to be huge.
That's true.
That's going to raise him way, way up in the estimation of our panel here.
And the vibes of a college party that he's going to bring, just like we respected it when it's McKinnon partying, Ovechkin partying. Those are the intangibles that we don't talk about enough. I want to see him at Arizona State University just having the best time.
Oh, no, that's tough.
I don't think it's unreasonable that Austin Matthews wins a Stanley Cup in the next two postseasons. And with that,
where though?
With Toronto, I don't think. I don't think it's Arizona.
Sorry.
I don't think it's unreasonable that he has a consummate. Like, I think this gap closes because all of these intangibles that we talk about, we're already talking about Cale Makar's playoff performance and all of these huge stages that impacts where people vote. Connor's going to do whatever Connor does in Edmonton. I'm not optimistic about that as much, but I think the Leafs will make a run at some point in time in the next 2 years, and that's going to really close that gap. And I don't think 64 is going to look bad at the end of the day in Austin, if anybody had an issue with that. You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong on that one.
I had him at 80th, by the way.
Matthews. I was at 75. I think 20 to 25 might be a little bit high for Matthews, even in 2 years. We have Malkin 26.
Wow, why are you so biased against the Leafs?
I know. That's what they say about me.
Someone must have had Austin at like 10 or something.
Who can we throw under the bus right now?
Well, I mean, we have the list here.
I hope it's Mendez.
Yeah, Ian's
52 is Scott Wheeler's the highest.
And Myrtle.
Of course it's Wheeler.
Oh, 56.
Wheeler. Oh, man.
Everyone else in that 70, 80 range, really.
So I think biases are interesting. And, you know, Eric talked about his bias for maybe players of a different era. Even with that, I'm going to throw Scott Powers under the bus here because he can't defend himself. But, you know, Scott's close with Daryl Belfry, who, you know, he wrote a book with, great book. Here's a plug. Go get Daryl's book with Scott Powers. But Daryl will have you convinced Austin Matthews is the best player who ever lived within 20 minutes of talking to him. He talks about his work ethic and how he'll get into detail about the skills he improves on every second. And so I want to talk about bias a little bit. Eric, you cop to yours. Sean, if we're giving some truth serum, did you have any biases that went into your assessments here that you can admit?
I mean, there's no way to cut it that I had Chris Letang in the 60s and I'm in Pittsburgh and I'm the same age as Chris Letang. And that guy's career has lasted from when I was in college until now. He's a close personal friend.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Got a great kid. Great kid. It's like he's like 4 or 5 now. Love him. Babysitter. But I mean, like everyone wants to think that they don't bring in some kind of preconceived, you know, notion into these things, and it's just not true. And it's borne out in the voting. Like I did not go out and say, me, Dom, and Shane, all three of us had Letang on our list, and nobody else did, and then that was enough to drag him into the top 100. I've joked about it. because it's funny, right? But I've right. joked about it. But I didn't go into this thing thinking like I'm gonna single handedly drag Chris Letang into the top 100. I looked at it and thought, okay, I think he's a step behind Duncan Keith and Drew Doughty, like in terms of defensemen for this era, right? So I dropped him down a little bit, and I fully anticipated that there were going to be more people who had him in the 70s or the 80s or whatever. I did not think I was going to have him at 68th and be the outlier. So whenever the results come out and you look at it, I mean, that's just that's a great example of me being like, okay, clearly, like I value what he's done more than anybody else because it's happened in the city that I live. We are of the same age group, and I've covered this team on and off for the last however many years, right? Like that's like clearly it had some sway with me that it didn't with other people. You got to be honest about it. Like there's no way around it. But the good part about the panel and about the way we did it and about the discussions that we had is that it kind of acted as a failsafe, right? Because Chris Letang shouldn't be the 68th best hockey player of the modern era, but if he's 98 or 99 or wherever he ended up, that seems a little bit more reasonable, and it's because of the counterbalance of everybody else who submitted ballots as well.
Hey, Craig, if I could just jump in for a second.
Yeah, of course.
One of the things that I did in terms of the process was that before I put the final ranking together, I broke everything down by position. So I had centers, I had wingers, and then I had defensemen, and I had goalies. And the reason I wanted to do that was because I wanted to have fair representation for every position in the game. I mean, I used to serve on the Hockey Hall of Fame selection committee for 15 years, and I don't think it's a big secret that goalies are notoriously underrepresented in the Hockey Hall of Fame. These are the position players. And that's always been a point of contention for me, that if we put such an emphasis on goaltenders, why aren't there more goaltenders? So, for example, I had, Jonathan Quick and Roby Bashan on my list. But in terms of this specific conversation about defensemen, I think Chris Letang is a great player. But when I ranked the defensemen from 1 to however many, I think I had 20, 22 on my list, I had him behind Doug Wilson and Larry Murphy. So I had Doug Wilson and Larry Murphy, two Hall of Famers, on my list, slightly ahead of Chris Letang. And when we got to 100 names, Letang wasn't in my top 100. And I think that's a real important point that, we could have had, if we had had 120 names, I think I had 10 people on my list that weren't on the final list. Probably all 10 of those players would have been on my list if we had been able to rank 120. But then our discussion would be about who's 121st. And if we had ranked 150, we wouldn't be having a discussion about who didn't make the cut at 151. So you have to have a cutoff somewhere, and you have to approach it in as rational a way that you can. And I will tell you this, I don't have the spreadsheet in front of me, but I probably spent more time moving guys up and down that list by position. And then once I had it in my head, how I wanted the defenseman ranked, then whoever missed the cut. So that, and I thought that was a fair way of handling it.
Before we go to the next segment, I do want, my bias would have been certainly towards the era where I was at all the finals, the Red Wings, Blackhawks, Penguins, Kings era. And I thought Kopitar got slighted. Like that was my, if I was, in the comments section, which I was under a name, but we don't, it's not my own name in going after you all. That Kings team was so dominant and Kopitar was so good. And I know everyone's probably has a version of that. And that was if we're in this span of time, he was as good as any center in the league on both sides.
I forced him through. But that was one of the revisions that I made. I was like, I need to get this guy on there. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Craig, yeah. Six out of the nine of us had Kopitar on the list. Six out of the nine. But because
he's seven.
Seven? Sorry, I'm blind on it. Seven? Yeah, it could be. Yeah. So only who were the two people gone that?
Yeah, let's.
Because he finished
Mendez and Wheeler.
Under the bus.
Yeah. Mendez and Wheeler.
Okay. He finished 102nd. I think we're allowed to say.
Oh,
that.
Did he really?
He finished two. He finished two out of the top 100, and most of us had him in our top 100. So you can your point is well taken, Craig. He should have been on the list. Most of us thought the same thing.
I think the issue is that aside from me and Shayna putting him 76th and 72nd, everyone else had him just at the cusp around 95 to 100.
Yeah.
And that that hurt.
That's similar with Brad Marchand, yeah, with the two of us, Brad, right? Like, we had him 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm. I had him on there. I had him on mine.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I did not scroll all the way to the right. I wanted to call you out for being wrong.
It's once again the youth trifecta.
You had him at 99, though. That's like you didn't care to have him on your list. You didn't want to fight for him.
You know what I was,
he's
trying
to talk shit to you on Twitter now. You're going to deserve it.
I was just trying. I was playing 4D chess there and wanted a big controversial name at 99 or 100 on the list. That's all.
That's what I do it for
the
content. Agree.
I do it for the readership. That's what I was.
But if you put him at 99 on yours, that's your way of like, you're like, I don't want to get shit from Brad Marchand when he reads this, so he's on my list when it gets revealed. But I don't actually want him on there. You need him in the 70s. You have to fight for him.
My 90s list is just full of guys that I put on there, so Eric wouldn't be mad at me. Yeah.
Well, I don't want to disappoint
Eric. I don't care about their readers. Come on, I don't want to look like a dummy with Eric.
I can't wait till you have
the 90s to 100 was the hardest part of the list, honestly, because it was like you could literally go, I could have him off. I could have him on. And you knew too. Like, if I vote this person 90 and no one has him, he's not making it. It doesn't fucking matter. So, sorry. Am I logical?
Yeah, you can.
Yes. Producer Jeff
just has to put explicit on it now. That's fine. A little extra work for
just.
JD.
I'm sorry. I realize, like, as it comes out of my mouth, like, wait. Quick body check on that. But no, if you put someone in the 90s, like, it's like Sean with Marchand. You want him so you look good that he's on your list, but you don't actually care if he makes it.
Right. Okay, well, so we'll get in. I like that as a setup for the next segment. We're going to get into your personal outliers. I think we touched on a little bit, but we have some good debate coming up. So we'll be right back for segment two.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We are back with segment two, where we are going to talk about each one of our panelists on this podcast. I don't want to say mistakes. Well, let me think for the right word here.
You can just skip mine. I've already talked about it.
Well, we've got another one of yours, Sean. We'll let Chris Letang that conversation stand. We've got another one for you to get into. We've got a good Mark Messier debate to come, but I'm going to start, and we're going to lead off with the big one to me with Shayna on this.
I knew you were going to.
Well, what do you want me to do, Shayna? So here's what happened on this one. Bobby Orr, who finished number three overall, you know, the greatest defenseman who ever played. I guess arguably we have to say now. Shayna,
you are by the way, hold on a second. Greatest defenseman you've ever played. You're clearly ignoring Chris Letang.
Well, obviously, Chris Letang aside. And I come in with a Nicklas Lidström bias, but anyways, Shayna had him eighth. Now, thankfully, that didn't knock him out of the top 10 or anything like some of these other ones. It didn't seem to move Bobby Orr too drastically. But Shayna, I'm sure, I don't know if you revealed this or shared it anywhere, but you know what went into that thought process. I'm not saying you were wrong, but it was a bold stance.
I'm not saying you're right either, though. I see where you're going. You know, I just hate defensemen and I hate older players, so I was just like, screw them.
One of those things is true. Yeah.
I love defensemen. I'm like the defenseman defender over here. No, like, I knew that I could vote him literally. I knew I could, like, not even have him on my list and it wouldn't affect him. So let's start with that. Like, he would be fine. But I just think that I think we have to talk about longevity. I think we held against Mike Bossy the fact that his career was shortened by injuries, which is fair. Like, when we get to these top 20 players, we have to. It's not a player's fault that their body can't hold up, but it, like, if you didn't play as long, it should impact your score. His peak years were outstanding.
Yeah.
But, like, we also should look at the league at that time and the quality of competition around him. And, like, it's nice to see someone dunk on, like, the Minnesota North Stars and the Detroit Red Wings, who weren't very good. But, like, I don't know. I take that into consideration as well. Like, you were dominating bad teams. You were part of a very good team. So I just wanted to, like, knock him down a peg. I didn't not. I mean, 8 is still very respectable, especially when you consider how short his career was. I think that we underappreciate Nick Lidstrom, who, to me, is the best defenseman of all time.
Certainly something you can defend. Did anybody in this group here have Bobby Orr number 2 overall? I know some voters did.
I did. Yeah.
I'll give the floor to you, Eric, for a counterpoint here, since you had Bobby as number 2 overall on your list. What was it about him that you thought put him in that top?
Well, I thought the top 3 were Wayne Gretzky, Mary Lemieux, and Bobby Orr. So basically, because I voted on these projects previously, I already had that discussion in my head about, you know, is Gretzky number 1? And I concluded that he was. So I had him at 1, and then I stared at Orr and Lemieux back and forth. And, you know, you have two of the giants of the game, both of whom had their careers shortened by injury. So there were a lot of parallels between the two. And the reason that I tipped it in favor of Orr was because I felt that he revolutionized the game. So, you know, if you take all of the, strip all the other factors out, what did Bobby Orr do that Mario Lemieux didn't? And that was, he changed the way the game of hockey was played. So up until Bobby Orr came along, defensemen defended. You know, once in a while, the Doug Harvey would go up on the rush, but they were completely outliers. And then Bobby Orr came along, and Harry Sinden gave free rein to play, and that created a style of play that other teams copied, and other players coming through the ranks were able to piggyback on. You know, I had a discussion with Paul Coffey in my profile of Bobby Orr about that. And Paul was great, by the way. Paul was like, Eric, yeah, I said, Paul, you know, you broke Bobby's single season goal scoring record. I said, you were one of the very few guys that, you know, conversationally, when it comes to pure stats, we can talk about it in the context of Bobby Orr. He said, no, that was Bobby Orr, you know. And, right, and for me to try and compare myself to Bobby Orr would be like if a young quarterback came in the NFL and tried to draw comparisons to Tom Brady, impossible to do. But I think that he fundamentally, his presence in the game and what he was able to do on the ice tipped the scale slightly for me when it came to decide between Orr and Lemieux at 2 or 3. And I have to tell you, if you talk to the people who played against, or even came behind, you know, I thought Al MacInnis told a really great anecdote too, because Al was a different type of player, not a great skater. So, you know, he was very careful to say that he changed the game for the Coffees and the Brian Leeches and the Cale Makars, but not for me because I was, you know, more of a plotter. He said, but he said, the first time I watched his highlights throughout his entire career, and then I walked out onto the bench at Maple Leaf Gardens, the first time I ever played at Maple Leaf Gardens. And I looked at one end of the ring, I looked at the other end of the ring, and I thought, that ice is so small, so small. And then when you look at the highlights of how Bobby Orr played, he said, he made it look like the St. Lawrence River. He's going up and down the ice. He's, you know, dropping a glove and picking it up and still in control of the puck. He's behind the net. John Davidson, this got cut out of the story, but told a very similar anecdote about a time in St. Louis where they were a pretty good defensive team, and Bobby Orr, killing a penalty, just had the puck for 90 seconds and no one could take it off them. It was on a string. So it was more the kind of thing that you see in rec hockey or, you know, your son's peewee team, when there's that one kid that just, you know, that is just so much better than everybody else that he just dominates on every shift. And that's really what Bobby Orr was. So, you know, again, it's as much the eye test and the fact that, you know, he was the Norris Trophy winner for basically every year that he played at a reasonable level of health. I mean, he was just, you know, the difference between him and the next best defenseman in his era was a chasm. And so, yeah, it was not very difficult for me to put before at that point. But again, you know, I watched him play, met him like as a 12-year-old when he was still that brush cut kid from Perry Sound. I thought he changed the way the game was played. And we still see ripples of that in today's game.
All right, Dom, you're up. You had Mark Messier, who finished number 17, I believe, on our list. Not high enough for some people. I will say that one, Drew, people didn't like that we had Mark Messier that low. They thought he was disrespected. I think including former employees of the Athletic, Carpi, didn't like it. He covered Mark Messier closely. But
you know, we're calling his placement on the list, actually? The 17th greatest player in the history of the post-expansion NHL presented by Mark Messier.
Well, you would think he would have gotten higher. Dom, he didn't crack your top 25, barely cracks your top 30. Mark Messier came in at number 29 on your list, I believe. Why do you hate Mark Messier?
I don't hate anyone on this list. I just think he is a bit overrated. I think he played in an era where it was really easy to score. And I think with a lot of my list, you'll see a lot of guys from the 80s who are significantly lower than I think some people would want, because it was such a high-flying time where your grandma could have scored 15 goals. And Messier played on the best team of that era.
Don't drag Marge Custance into this.
Mary B. Gentilly would have potted 25, let me tell you.
Sorry,
go ahead. I'm not even going to tell you what Teresa Duhatchuk would have done.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought his biggest claim is his longevity and that he scored a lot in the 80s, and it didn't really do it for me in terms of putting him in the top 20. I respect and understand why he would be, and maybe I'm wrong for being a bit more biased towards peak years and players who did it in a more difficult era, but he just doesn't do it for me. I think he's a bit overrated for just playing a lot.
Hmm. So much of what surrounds Mark Messier is some of the, you know, the leadership stuff. There's a lot of lore around Mark Messier. And I think there are, you know, there's Steve Yzerman has a bit of that, and people didn't love where he was on the list. How much did you, and I don't know if anybody feels strongly about this question, so I'll open up the floor, which I shouldn't do, but the lore around players, did you try to just block that out completely, or do you factor in some of that, you know, the leadership and some of the off-ice stuff that people love to tell?
Sometimes, like I blocked it out mostly, especially for Messier. I was 2 years old when he made his promise that they would win, and it'll just I love that he did that and that he backed it up. It's just that it is just a moment in a long career, and that doesn't really make me want to say he's 28th or 27th because of it. I think I try to focus on the body of work and the peak body of the work.
Yeah. So, and this is a good segue to another former Oiler. Glenn Anderson didn't make the list, but Eric, you had him at number 72. So that's a pretty, I think he ended up at 112 overall in the rankings. So it wasn't even like, you know, a Kopitar snub. It was pretty far down. Do you feel like everyone else got it wrong, or what? Why do we have a big Glenn Anderson gap here?
Yeah. Well, and that's my big outlier. That's my Chris Letang. And that has everything to do with this playoff performance. Chris
Letang. Glad that's the ruling stick by outliers. Yeah. The Chris Letang.
Yeah, I just think that what do we value in hockey in the NHL? What do we value? We value winning in the playoffs. You know, you can talk all you want about regular season statistics, but once the puck drops in April and somebody raises the Stanley Cup 2 months later, at the end of the day, we're talking about that team and those players. I mean, why are we having the Cale Makar discussion? It's because of how well he played in that particular playoff. And he was fantastic. But, you know, he is going to be one of the greatest defensemen in the history of the game. So then you look at Glenn Anderson, and I remember Glenn saying that, well, first of all, I covered Glenn Anderson in 79-80 on the Canadian Olympic team before he ever got to the NHL. So I was aware of who this guy was. That Russian team that that lost the Americans in the Miracle on Ice. The Canadians almost beat them in that tournament. I was at the Classic covering the Canadian team. And the one player that they were worried about on that, not that talented Canadian team, was Glenn Anderson, because he skated so well and he was so fearless going to the net. The number of times that he turned those Soviet defensemen inside out, beating them by driving to the net was extraordinary. So if you watch the way he played, he had this recklessness about him. Now, the downside of Glenn Anderson was that he was somebody that couldn't get focused for every game. So if you look at his career numbers, you know, very good. You know, I think almost a point a game player. I wrote it down somewhere, like I think 1,100 points in a little over 1,100 games. But in the playoffs, when it mattered and when he was focused, he was dynamite. I mean, he's fourth in playoff goals, fourth in playoff points. I think 214 in 225 games. He won 6 Stanley Cups. He has the most game-winning goals in Edmonton Oilers history, more than Gretzky, more than Messier. I mean, he was a guy that rose to the occasion. And so, you know, you were asking earlier, like, about mythology. Well, to me, I don't know if mythology is the right word there, but I will tell you that, you know, watching this guy from April until June, was extraordinary. Like, he was at another level. Now, if he could have brought that in the regular season, I don't think we would be having this discussion. But I felt that, I mean, playoffs matter. Playoffs matter to hockey fans. Playoffs matter to hockey reporters. You know, Craig, you and I used to go to the finals all the time. That was just, you know, part of what we did in our generation. And whenever I saw Glenn Anderson play in the playoffs, he was often their best player. And so that was why I rated him as highly as I did. I just flat out think that matters.
We'd go to playoff games. We'd sneak into concerts. We did a lot.
Whoa, are we going to tell that story?
Time has passed. I got kicked out. You got in. I had to be your. I distracted the security guards. Sean, Sean. So besides Chris Letang, I actually don't mind. I'm on board with this one. Marian Hossa finished 84th overall on the list. You had Marian, one of my three favorite players of all time to cover and deal with, at number 58. So you love your defensive wingers, like your two-way wingers, right?
I think it's an undervalued player profile, and I think there was probably some level of I don't want to say retribution, because that sounds like it was a little bit more thought out than it was, but it might have been some unconscious, you know, desire on my part to place him to do right by Marian Hossa after a career. Like, he should have won Selkies, you know, like that's just always the way that I felt about him. The way I looked at it was his career was maybe undervalued on a larger scale, and the type of player he was, I think, is maybe undervalued on a larger scale. So I don't know if this is me, you know, again, trying to make up for that or whatever, but that's a gap. Again, that's another one. That's a significant one where I was surprised to see it, because as I'm going through the process and you're looking at a guy like Nikita Kucherov or whatever, I think he's maybe a decent comparison, because I had him in the same, you know, the same tier. But I'm like, okay, well, Kucherov, great as he is, his career isn't over yet. Hossa did it over a longer span of time and was a more complete player, even though he wasn't, you know, obviously wasn't a scoring champion or anything. So I gave him the edge on that based on body of work and just the overall idea that now it seems possible for a winger to win a Selke in a way that it just didn't, you know, to me 15 years ago. Right. So I was giving him credit for the, in a weird way, in a very minuscule way, it's sort of the same rationale that, you know, leads to Bobby Orr getting placed at, you know, second, right? Because you're like, he sort of opened the door to make things possible and made people think a little bit differently about wingers, at least in this century, right? I can't speak to the way people treated them in 1969 or whatever, but I think there was a little bit of a paradigm shift that came with Hossa, right? And that's something that I clearly valued a little bit more than the other folks did.
All right, before we go to segment three, quick lap around the room. You have a playoff run. You get peak Kopitar or peak Marian Hossa. Who you got?
Man.
Kopitar.
Mm-hmm. And it's Kopitar. You go. See, this is. I'm like, yeah, you still got to go with the center. It's not like I'm I'm ignoring my own rule, right? But I had Kopitar on my list, so it's none of my business.
Tom, I'm going to go Kopitar. I say Kopitar. I feel like Hossa, the knock against him is going to be that he wasn't like the star of his team, and Kopitar was that defensive presence and yet the star of his team. I think that's like, he's the driver of the Kings in their championship era, while Hossa was a key piece who I think I had the next best vote for him behind Sean. So
I love
big fan of his game. And agree with the reasoning, but I give Kopitar the edge.
So
I didn't mean to jump back in, but this was a point that we're releasing our ballots. Like, everyone's going to see where we put everybody. This is going on the site in the next couple of days. It'll be probably up by the time folks are listening to this. Kopitar got screwed by not winning that second Conn Smythe in the Kings playoff run. The Justin Williams Conn Smythe run. I don't even want to say that Justin Williams, because like what, Mr. Game 7 and blah blah, he had big moments and memorable stuff, and like I don't want to take a leak on Justin Williams for this, right? But if Kopitar wins that,
he should have,
he's in the 80s. I'm convinced of that. So while you're parsing it out and you're doing your internal math and you're coming up with your own individualized list before you send in your big spreadsheet, that was a consideration for me. Like, this guy kind of got screwed in a round of trophy voting, and it's going to stop him from, you know, ultimately making the list.
I have the two very close, and I want to make sure that I stayed true to my list when I made this decision. And I have Kopitar at 76 and Hossa at 79. So I'm good with sticking with Kopitar and not doing some revisionist history now that the question's out there.
Mm-hmm. I just, because Gmail saves everything, I was just looking at my Conn Smythe vote from that was June 13th, 2014. I had Justin Williams, Doughty 2, Kopitar 3. So here I am.
Justin Williams won the Conn Smythe in the Blackhawks series. Like, once that playoff series unfolded the way that it did, like, you wrote it in pen that Williams was going to end up is the con if the Kings actually, you know, finish the job.
All right, coming up next, we go into the email inbox and we get some questions from you, dear listener, and we'll get some responses. We will be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, we are back for the final segment. As Sean and I always like to do, we turn segment three over to you all, because at that point, we are done doing any of the work. And in this case, we took on a few emails to talk about the list. And I'm going to dive right into them instead of going to the comments like we normally do, because that's way too hard and complicated. This first email comes from Christopher Boyd. Christopher, thanks for sending in this question. And just goes right into the attack. First, how you put Sakic ahead of Steve Yzerman is beyond me. Stevie had an extra cup, a Selke, and in my book, the Pearson and Hart for each are equals because Gretzky and Lemieux existed in the 80s. But whatever. Clearly, there's some pro-Colorado bias in The Athletic. Would anybody agree with that? Do we feel like we've got pro-Colorado?
No, of course not.
I've never heard that before.
This is the
first accusation. I'm going to go out on a limb and say this is a Detroit-based email. But my real gripe is, how are these guys not back-to-back on the list? Great captains, great ambassadors of the game. The only two guys on either side of that historic rivalry the other team didn't really hate. Okay, maybe Lidstrom too. That's true. Like, anyways, we'll get to this. Someone should check their birth records and see if they are fraternal twins separated at birth. If you've done this right, they would have been tied for 14, Chris Boyd. I don't know
that's
if we
insane,
can respond to that.
Insane, Chris.
You want us to manipulate the voting panel.
First of all, Craig, he answered his own question, because what he said is splitting hairs. And I think that all of us that looked at this I don't have my ballot in front of me, but I know I had Sakic ahead of Eisenman, but it could have gone either way. They both contributed so much over the course of their careers. And I'm trying to think of why I had Sakic ahead of Eisenman. I think simply because towards the end, Stevie was so beat up that he wasn't the player that he was at his peak towards the end of his career. And I think a little bit at the start of his career, you remember, you probably remember better than anyone, Craig, that it took a while for Stevie Eisenman to morph into that presence that we all think of him as, the great leader, the two-way player, the guy that just got it done, who was the driving force behind one of the great dynasty teams of all time. So if you subtract, you know, first few years of Eisenman and the last few years of Eisenman, and you look at Sakic, who maybe, you know, was more of an impact player right away and lasted a little bit longer at the other end, you know, you slightly tilted towards Sakic. But again, it's splitting hairs, and I think the reader acknowledged that in the way he framed that question.
I do want to get specifically say, though, like, Sakic was 13 and Eisenman was 15, and he's saying they should be tied for 14th.
I don't think he really means we should have manipulated the
I don't. You'd be so. I don't know, man. You never know. And Guy Lafleur is 14. So good luck choosing between the three of those guys. It's crazy. Joe Sakic won an Art Ross. That's why I picked him. How about that? You want like an actual answer? And I'm like, Ty goes. Yeah, Ty goes to the guy who won a scoring title and a heart. Whatever.
Yeah.
It's such a slight edge, but there is. It's there. It exists.
Yeah, I looked back and Joe Sakic had three first-team All-Stars, a Hart Trophy, Pearson, Art Ross. Steve Eisenman had the Selkie, which the reader mentioned, failing to mention what Sakic really did. So they are very close. Their career stats are very close. When we looked at their total win value, their peak, 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, very close. But the edge was usually Sakic, and he had the more prestigious awards.
You can make your...
You hate defense. You hate defensive awards.
No one cares. Like, Hart Selke, you're going with the Hart. Everyone wants the Hart.
Craig, were you in the dressing room that... I'm trying to remember. I think it was the second Colorado Stanley Cup when Milan Hayduk's father was standing there in the celebration. And that was the one where Sakic scored the goal between the legs of the defenseman. And it was just like, and he said to him in broken Czech, "You are the greatest player ever." And Joe was there, and he was touched, but he was kind of embarrassed in that Joe Sakic,
right,
you know, don't look at me kind of way. It was one of those moments where, you know, like, Hayduk's father, you know, because Joe, that's, you know, awesome, dragged Hayduk to that chance. I mean, it was great. And he was, he was just, he was so important on that team. He carried himself with, you know, class and dignity. And I think, honestly, you could have Joe a little bit higher if it wasn't for the fact that he was so self-effacing. He kept trying to direct attention to everybody around him. I mean, he was just one of the flat-out best players I've ever covered in my life. And I have no problem having him where we had him.
I think the point Chris makes that, I mean, that rivalry was as good as any I've ever lived through in any sport in terms of just the hatred. Like, there was it was bloodlust, like, literal, like the Draper stuff and all that. And Chris is right to say, like, Sakic and Eisenman seem to be above it all, right? Like, the fan base is kind of like, oh yeah, Sakic's actually really good, and I'm not mad at it. Like, love the Mew, I hate, but Sakic's great. Yeah. And I think that says something about each of the players, that they kind of were excused from that hatred from the other side. All right. Second email comes from Sam, says, "Hey, Tuesday boys, this is Sam from Indiana." Hey, Sam. "Two comments, no bitching. I loved the Patrick Kane story, though as Blackhawks faithful since birth, it made me incredibly sad. I can already tell that my future kids will be really sick of hearing about the good old days of when the Blackhawks had Kane and Taves and Hossa and Keith and Connor Bedard. He beat us to it. Maybe they'll grow up seeing Bedard raise cups for my Hawks, but we all know that pick is going to Arizona, so they can ruin his career." Wow, this is great. This is better than anywhere else.
So Austin Matthews wants to go there.
Arizona has Logan Cooley. They don't need anybody else. West Mifflin, PA. Let's go. Let's go.
Number two, he even numbered his thoughts. Number two, I might publish this. This is good. "Sean, this may potentially be a refreshing comment about the Fedorov story, but I actually liked the angle you took. I'm going to pause and explain to the listener who hasn't been part of this trope that's dominated our discussion. Sean, we asked everyone to, you know, find a unique angle that hadn't been told, ideally, or tell stories about these players in a way that hadn't been told, which is hard to do for a lot of players. Sean Gentile had Sergei Fedorov, and he wrote about the skates, which I loved. It was so memorable for me, you know, growing up in Detroit. Those skates were it was a cool story. 99% of the readers hated it. Right, Sean? Would that be good?
99? Wait a second. 99% of the Red Wings fans who read that probably hated it. Yeah, what are you going to do?
Sam from Indiana.
Go watch the Russian Five if you want a great look at, you know.
Go to Wikipedia if you want.
Read the book, watch the doc. Like that's been done already. I'm not going to be able to top that one. Sorry, folks.
Sam from Indiana continues, as someone who considers himself a shoe connoisseur, the shoe culture of the other sports, primarily basketball, is a subject of conversation, with the biggest stars seemingly having their own designs, etc. Taking an equipment-based approach to talk about someone wearing skates that stand out from the rest was unique, in my opinion. If I could skate worth a shit, I would try and find some to buy for myself. So we found your defender, Sean.
There we go. Thank you.
Now that there's a shoe angle, I might have to become a defender too.
I mean, love it. It's true. I think there's who wrote that email again?
Oh, that was Sam from Indiana. Your biggest
Sam
fan.
From Indiana. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the Sean Gentile Army of Champions. Yeah, you get it. No, I obviously feel the same way. Like I'm a sneaker guy. I'm a shoe guy. Like I like aesthetics when it comes to other sports. And I wanted to bring a little bit of that, you know, to it. But all due respect to Sergei Fedorov, who I hope that came through in the Fedorov piece. Like he was the guy for someone who was born in 1986 or 1987 or that generation of person specifically. Like, I came of age when Sergei Fedorov was the coolest hockey player on the planet, right? And I think that was true for a lot of people. So thank you.
Craig, can I make a shout out to Ian Denemy, who's one of the anonymous editors at The Athletic, who babysat this project and did a great job. You know, I think it took over his life. Probably didn't see his kids for most of the last 12 months. But I will tell you, we all gathered together in June in Montreal at the draft, and Ian made a presentation about the NHL 99 project. And I can repeat exactly what his words were, and you referenced it in the question that you asked. It was, tell me something I didn't know about a player that has been written about hundreds and thousands of times. And and the fact that he gave us enough lead time to do that, right? So he said that in June. And then you had the whole summer to think about it. Okay, what can I tell you about Paul Kariya that you don't already know? Everybody knows the concussion history. Everybody.
I loved your Kariya story, Eric. I think that was that's a top 10 easy piece that ran alongside all this. I loved it.
Well, thank you very much. But I'll tell you how it happened. I was having lunch with Paul in Tustin, and he and Val, his partner, were there, and they brought their dog Wyatt, and for 2 hours, Wyatt was going back and forth between Paul and Val. And we were talking about hockey. We were talking about all the normal things. And finally, it was like, what's the story with the dog? You know?
I was going to ask Shayna that, by the way.
We have a friend.
Which one is that, Shayna?
This is Kona. Kona's distraught. She can't find Zook.
Oh, hi, Kona.
So she's been crying, walking around the house because Zook's sleeping in a spot that Kona doesn't know about.
Anyway, at the end of an hour and a half of a bunch of conversation about hockey and life and everything else, Paul started talking about Wyatt and 10-year-old Maltese. And, you know, I had Ian's voice and his admonition in my head when I sat there, and I thought, well, I could go this way or I could go that way. And it's like, I'm going with Wyatt the dog. So I think that was important. I think that set this project apart. I mean, Luke Robitaille talking about walking the Camino. You know, Rob Blake, you know, and Craig, you profiled Rob ahead of the Hall of Fame, so you know the story. You know, the picking tobacco as a 15-year-old kid and having to take time off from his summer job to try out for a junior B team, and his father stepping in on the tobacco picking crew for Rob to go and try out for that team. If he doesn't try out for that team, he doesn't have an NHL career. He doesn't have a college career. You know, he's basically out of hockey. And you know, so unspool that thread to get from that tobacco farm as a 15-year-old to junior B to Bowling Green to the NHL to the Hall of Fame to the manager of the Kings. I mean, it's the classic road not taken. These stories were so much fun to write. They were so much fun to write. Honestly, it gave me so much energy at this very late stage of my career to be able to participate in this. And I loved writing them and I loved reading them. It was great. It was just really fun.
You loved writing them so much that you wrote 35 of them, in fact. Like, this project doesn't get done without Eric DeHatcher.
Yeah,
my gosh, the amount of work you put in was just in the caliber of it was through the roof.
Thank you very much.
It was great. And I'm glad you mentioned Ian Dennamy, assisted by Rich Hammond. So many of you know, covering the Kings, Rich also had a hand in the editing process. And I know a lot of work went into this. I think we can give shout outs at the end here. I just wanted to ask this one last question. It might have been Chris Boyd circling back saying, on this list, most of these players are already in the Hockey Hall of Fame. But some are still playing, and a few just finished and are coming up on their first chance. Zetterberg is one of those. Should they all get in? Is everybody in the NHL 99 project an eventual Hall of Famer?
Huh. Yes.
Chris Letang definitely will be, right?
Should be.
But no, I...
Should be.
Yes, I'm going to say a big yes
on,
to like...
I'll be on the committee by that point.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
right,
Eric? Sure.
Right, Eric?
It's like the players who just finished, like the Zetterbergs and the Lundqvists, I think are sure things. And then it's like, if you're good enough to make this list and still playing, the Matthews, the Kucherov, Hedman, mm-hmm. Kopitar, like those... Those players, I think, all are yeses. And the players who we're talking about, should we have changed the rules for, like Cale Makar? It's like, yeah, yes to them too.
All right.
What's really funny is when you look at current players, it's almost like everybody is either in the top 100 and with some or very, very close to it in the case of Kopitar and Brad Marchand, or not in the discussion. It's interesting. I think there was kind of, whether we realize it or not, it was like, if these guys are gonna be Hall of Famers, if they're really on track for it, they're gonna be in the top 100. Otherwise, you know, let's see what happens. Pretty much, big gap though.
All right, last, I'll open the floor to anyone who has any parting shots here, any thoughts about the project, shout outs, or anything else. And I really want to echo what Sean said about Eric's work on this. I mean, everybody put a ton of work into it, but Eric, your perspective, I think, was invaluable. The work was awesome. Like, it was just a treat to wake up and see what was on the site that day, and so much of it was your work. So that was great.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, then I'm going to wrap up the podcast. Thank you all for doing this, for explaining your picks. I'm sure as we release ballots over the next couple of days, the debate will continue. So this is invaluable perspective. Jeff, producer Jeff, for setting this up. Always great. A quick plug to wrap up. We got Mike Rupp is going to be on the show with Granger, Russo, and Pizzo on the roundtable show this week. Don't forget to review and do all the things you should do about a good podcast. Give it 5 stars, and then you can write whatever you want after that. And if you want to subscribe to The Athletic and read all of this fine work, if somehow you're in I think the small minority of hockey fans who are not subscribers, you can go to theathletic.com/hockeyshow, and you get in for $2 a month for a year. It's a great deal. Sean and I will be back next week with our regular scheduled programming. Thank you all. And Happy New Year.
Very, very dramatic by the end of it.
Happy New Year.
A very dramatic Happy New Year.